Full Service Radio is supported by Compass, the future of real estate in the Metro DC area and beyond. Discover more at compass.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. I'm Eddie Kim, proud DCist, hungover Trekkie, and acerbic bartender.
Acerbic, nice one.
Oh, very apropos.
I'm Matthew Ramsey, flavor knot, gluttonous Maximus, and cheeseburger Eagle Scout. Every week we share a Shift Drink and swap war stories from behind the line with chefs, bartenders, bakers, brewers, and anyone who touches this all-encompassing industry. This week, we're joined by two master fermentators, Sarah and Isaiah of Keep Well Vinegar and White Rose Miso.
Spell check on that.
Yeah, I've heard the infinitely more pretentious fermentationist.
Ooh.
But fermentator sounds like a guy who has a lot of vodka.
I'm the fermentator.
Okay, so does bartender and mixologist. So what's the equivalent? What would you prefer to call yourself?
Oh God.
I don't know. At this point, kind of like hillbillies. Like out in the backwoods making moonshine.
Yeah. Whiskey runners.
You guys read by candlelight, correct?
Yeah.
The candles Smoke are signals. Made from beef tallow using only fully pastured...
Obviously. All right. So let's cut to... I mean, we're already dabbling. We're doing a little Shift Drink. Oh, sorry. Eddie, you're right.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Shift Drink.
We'll talk about the Shift Drink, and then we'll talk a little weekend review.
A little bit of what's happening in the week. So right now, we have already started drinking. I tell you, you are done with yours already.
Hey, no, there's no judging the Shift
Shocking.
Drink.
Shocking.
A Vinegroni.
Yeah.
Vinegroni. Okay, so...
Not the Negroni, the Vinegroni.
Vinegroni. Where did you get this idea?
A Negroni is my all-time absolute favorite cocktail. It's my go-to when I go and sit down in a bar. You know, is this place any good?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How's a Negroni?
It's the standard that you...
Exactly. You know, one thing I talk a lot about as we've sort of fully transitioned in our journey from pastry chefs to people who ferment and making vinegar is...
Fermentators.
Yes, fermentationalizes.
Capital F.
Is our sort of, I don't know, continuing evolution of our relationship with sugar. And, you know, you don't really think that much about all the sweetness that's in a Negroni because its defining characteristic is, of course, that bitter
right.
from the Aperol or Campari, whatever spirit you're using there. But as soon as you have this one, in which the bitterness just comes from the vinegar, which is not, of course, sweet at all, you know, it really sort of comes into focus just
it's
how much...
super refreshing and awesome.
Right. So you gave us a goodie bag of amazing things that you make. So the vinegar hand soap that you make, we'll talk about that in a little bit.
But yeah, so we're using
the bitter lemon vinegar, which takes the place of Campari. Sweet vermouth. We're using Capitoline Rosé vermouth,
which is delicious.
From a good friend Kat at Capitoline Vermouth.
What?
Some classic Gordon's London Dry Gin.
Nice.
What was the ratio on that? Because it's like perfect.
Yeah. Because the vinegar is a little strong, Isaiah said to do two parts gin, two parts vermouth, and one part vinegar, which I totally understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's delicious.
It works.
Are you guys familiar with the bitter lemon itself?
No.
All right.
I mean, yes, but not... I feel like you have a cool story about
it. Yeah, just like his favorite story.
Okay.
What's your favorite fruit story? Okay.
So there's a couple of really fantastic farmers that everywhere we've gone, we've always worked really hard to support. And
yeah.
We've always been buying these bitter lemons from them because we're really excited to have some kind of local citrus coming from a great direct farm source. I would say for at least 5 or 6 years, we would just buy them and try to do all sorts of stuff.
We tried
yuzu kosho and preserved lemons and tried to squeeze them into drinks. And they're just, you know, they have these kind of funny flavors. They're a little yeasty on the outside. The fruit itself is small.
It's actually called a bitter orange.
Ah, okay.
Also.
Yeah.
But we call it bitter lemon just to make it easier for people because it has much more of a lemon flavor.
Yeah.
Interesting.
They're
you slice it open. It's like, it's not that much fruit, not that much juice, a lot of seed and pith.
Oily.
Ah, really?
Also, yeah. Well, it has good. A little bit of a fuzz, but a lot of like, almost like a turpentine kind of sticky.
Interesting.
Like, it's a challenging
thing. One thing that we always... so we would just make all this stuff with them and throw it away. One thing that we always complain about when we're making vinegar is how much volatile, sort of top note, funny flavors really evaporate during the very long multi-stage fermentation process. And in this case, with the bitter lemons, it actually works in our favor, letting some of the funny yeasty notes and other off flavors eventually sort of drift away. And then by the time the fermentation is done, the vinegar is ready, all you're left with is beautiful, sort of almost grapefruity citrus rind.
That's really cool.
So
I feel like you said mentioned it's also known as bitter orange. That's used a lot in like Mexican
a
cooking.
A hearty orange. You know, the more research I do, I was just talking to someone about this. The more research I do into this fruit, the more there's a lot of different varieties too. Like there's the orange, the Seville orange that's used to make the jam and marmalade. And then there's a lot of other, there's lots of other of these funny citruses that are coming from lots of different parts that kind of get grafted together or change. So this one, it's also sometimes called a flying dragon lemon.
What? Or, why didn't you say that one?
Yeah, it's like all these funny names, and so we think that it's this flying dragon lemon or a hearty orange or a bitter orange or one of these things.
If we every time we post about it and call it anything on Instagram, it's guaranteed to start a debate in the comments about
Yeah, it's like the gooseberry or the groundcherry, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's like really, 1 million names.
Right. It's like, oh, you mean this.
Yeah.
So we call it bitter lemon.
That's awesome.
I don't know what it
is. No, it's fantastic.
It's a bitter lemon.
Well, and I imagine like that's kind of like one of the cool things about what you guys do is you guys see the nuances of produce in a totally different way. I mean, you're seeing the way you talk about different lemons as they ferment and like the properties that they give off, and you're seeing these in a very unique light, I feel like.
Well, we're constantly looking for sugar, really. And we're also looking at something that's going to hold its flavor throughout at least a year of fermentation. So things that you normally would taste that aren't delicious, another good example is the aronia berry, which is not super awesome to like shove in your mouth. After it ferments for a long time, really results in this great vinegar. Hmm. And that's a really cool thing. But we didn't see that up front necessarily.
Right.
Someone came to us and they said, my uncle has this aronia berry farm. Do you want to try it out? We said, of course we do.
Yeah.
How could we not? And that, again, resulted in one of our favorite vinegars through that long process.
The same thing goes with our wine production. You have the best wine grapes are not very tasty to have. They're usually incredibly too tart.
Yeah, they have to hold up a long time.
Exactly.
Right?
Cider apples.
But they provide
exactly. We just ate some unbelievably, unpalatable crab apples.
Yep.
Up at Three Springs Fruit Farm, where they have crab apple trees planted like every 10th tree just for pollination purposes. And this year they decided to start harvesting them because they've really gotten serious about doing a lot of hard cider.
We didn't know how important crab apples were to hard cider. But they're like crucial.
And that's another thing where it's like, I mean,
you don't think of it.
Kind of start to feel like a broken record. You're like, well, listen, this is like totally inedible on its own.
Right.
But once you ferment it.
Hey, guys, give us all your really gross fruit.
Yeah. Well, that makes it really awesome.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about this, but that kind of talks about like upcycling a lot of produce that normally would get thrown away and not used.
But
you guys see the beauty in what it can turn into.
One of our, you know, big goals in studying Keep Well Vinegar was to see how we could really meaningfully interact with some scale with local growers who we felt were, you know, sort of leaders in responsible practices.
Yeah.
Without honestly having to hire a lot of people.
We
both sort of managed kitchen staffs and
right.
that we're either not interested or not that good at it.
Yeah.
So it's really, you know, just the other day between the two of us, we were able to knock out, you know, 2,500 pounds of unbelievable organic heirloom tomatoes at the height of the season, peak ripeness, beautiful sugar.
The green zebras?
Yeah,
green zebras. We got so many that we split it up into like
I've never done
varietals.
It. I see you on Instagram. So it's so obscure to be like, I know, we'll do a green zebra vinegar.
You're committing a year forward, right? Basically. Yeah. And it's a lot of produce.
We'll see.
All right. Well, before we kind of dig too deep into this, we're definitely going to come back to all this. We're going to do just a little week in review, kind of things that are going on. Notably tonight, it's Two Birds, One Stone's 5th year anniversary slash birthday slash death day, as we know it. They're transitioning, but they're having a big party tonight, so definitely go celebrate, go say hi, cry into some beautiful cocktails. It's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, they'll definitely probably be serving I would hope their pina colada.
Pina colada is on the menu.
They're going to have all of their classics, the best drinks, as voted by the guests.
Yeah.
So
I had the pina colada on Saturday, and it was sensational.
This makes a great like carrot soda and curry drink. So, yeah, we'll be there.
We'll be there. Another news, Eddie.
A little bit of news. Just found out today McDonald's is going to be releasing a 48-piece chicken nugget bucket.
Well, there's a good idea.
I know.
That's a good idea.
This is personally big news for me. Unfortunately, it's only in Japan in celebration of NGT 48, which is like a 20-year-old pop band.
Nugget 48, basically, right?
It's weird.
Amazing.
It's weird. I don't want a bunch of Japanese girls looking at me while I'm eating my...
That sounds
chicken nuggets in bed.
It sounds amazing.
Hello.
Sounds like every other day in Eddie's.
Yeah.
Speaking of McDonald's, this happened to me, and this is like a huge. This is bigger than the 48-piece chicken nuggets in my mind. I got a Big Mac on the late night.
Scandal.
Yeah, like I don't dabble that often, but first of all, I pulled up. Elizabeth was in the car, and she likes her like cheeseburger, double cheeseburger, family meal. They were only doing fish fillets and Big Macs, which is fine for me because that's my meal. There was carrots and lettuce, like regular lettuce, not shredded lettuce, on the Big Mac.
Carrots?
Yeah. Like shredded carrots, and like sliced carrots and lettuce.
Did you get the sense that was on purpose?
I think they ran out and used their salad mix on that.
I mean, Matthew are just sitting there. It's like, what conspiracy theories do we have?
That comes right to mind.
How did this happen?
Would you do?
What's going through the mind of the...
McDonald's. Like, their number one thing is, like, consistent. Like, you can go anywhere in the world and they have, like, for the most part, like, the same experience, right? Like...
Which McDonald's is this?
I went to Cap East and I got...
Have you written
and I
a
got
letter
carrots.
Yet?
No, I haven't. I don't really necessarily want to get somebody in trouble about this, but I just, it's so weird. I kind of liked it, I'll be honest. Carrot added a nice, like, subtle sweetness to it. I liked
crunch.
It. Yeah, that was good.
Something that popped on my radar recently is a piece in the New Yorker by Michelle Zahmer, who is actually the front woman for a band in Philly called Japanese Breakfast. She's half Japanese, or she's half Korean, excuse me. And it's about her, it's called Crying in H Mart. And it seems like it's a very dour, very, very solemn piece, but
it's
beautiful though.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, and it's about her mother had died from cancer, and she feels that was her last connection to the Korean side of her heritage, and how she feels... She worries about wondering who is she going to call when she needs to find out what exact brand of noodle that she used to eat when she was a kid. So
yeah, definitely check it out.
A lot of it just kind of harkens a lot to a lot of immigrant kids who are fearful of losing a connection no matter what happens. So
also, like, just like out of the first paragraph, I learned what the H in H Mart.
Yes, H Mart is used to be called Hanarum for us kids who grew up. Running around the aisles, which means arms full of
one arm full of groceries.
One arm full of groceries.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. Yeah, never knew that.
Yes.
In other news, R.I.P. Robin Leach, motherfucker.
Champagne
wishes and caviar dreams. That's my Robin Leach.
That was really good.
maybe the original kind of Anthony Bourdain, but
yeah, kind of. But of like lifestyles,
something of the very different.
Do you guys ever watch that growing up at all? Were there any standout episodes for you?
Not that I remember. I just always remember him on a lot of yachts.
Yeah.
Which seems like
some loafers.
Yeah.
There was
a lot of blazers.
He did have a certain president on his show.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, President Trump was on his show.
Whoa, really?
I'm gonna check that out.
He did a Mike Hart one with the Beach Boys, and it is so ridiculous. If you get a chance to watch it, it is like so obnoxious and. It's everything that bad. That's Mike Hart. But anyways, I'm anti-Mike Hart, Beach Boys. I love the Beach Boys, but pro Brian Wilson.
And lastly, a little bit news coming from the West Coast. Roy Choi's project, Local, which was an endeavor for him to provide a lot of great quality local produce at very cheap prices. You know, kind of the idea that everyone has a right to kind of eat well and has actually called it quits. They'll be only doing catering from now on. So if you're on the West Coast, go hire him to cater your stuff because it's a great project. And we're sad to see
it is really cool.
It didn't quite succeed.
Yeah, Roy Choi is the man.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's bring it back to you guys. Enough about the week. Let's do a little thing we call Two Truths, One Lie.
Two Truths, One Lie.
All right. So this is just kind of a way for us to kind of get to know you a little bit better. Actually, you guys prepare two truths, one lie. What you got?
Did you see him wipe his face?
Yeah. It is. It's all about the micro expressions.
Yeah, don't. Do you want me to turn around?
To take lead and you.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing it. Nope, no, I'm not. Terrible liar.
Is this two truths, one lie for both of you?
Yes.
Okay.
We had to.
Is it two for one?
Okay, two for a special.
And we also hearken back to our old days of being in a pastry kitchen.
Okay.
We tried to think of some...
We're fully aware of our sort of ability to sort of just evangelize about local food and fermentation technique. Okay. Stuff that might kind of get a little dry.
It's not... It's pretty nerdy. No. Our lies were pretty nerdy. We're like, can you believe we used to ferment that way? So weird.
So we put a theme in here, and the theme was celebrity encounters... Via the kitchen.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, we
thought. Whoa, a theme edition.
Okay.
Yeah. Alexa, can we get a sound effect for that, please? Let's see what she gets.
Oh.
Nice. Not bad.
That was a little Madonna.
Yeah, there's a little mix in there.
Also a famous person. All right,
celebrity.
All right. There is, after, while we were...
You look at me when you lie to me, sir.
All right. While we were running the pastry kitchen at Woodbury Kitchen, there was a time where we felt confident enough in our local pantry and the strides that we had made that we decided to take a hard line against ever using citrus again.
Okay.
Outside of course, weird stuff like the bitter orange,
right.
The bitter lemon.
The flying dragon lemon.
You're right.
What?
There was one exception that we had to make when somebody called to have their 50th wedding anniversary. A big party. They rented out a hunk of the restaurant for it. Their personal chef insisted that we make for them a lemon cake, and they were at that time a big enough deal that we felt that we had no choice but to comply.
Don't look at me. I'm not.
And that was and that was how Sarah was
sort of
non-consensually forced into making a lemon cake for one Bill Cosby.
Wow.
Or not.
We don't know that yet.
Yeah.
Eddie's face is a guess.
Or not.
Poker face.
All right. Number two.
Chicago.
Okay. We were in Aspen for the Food and Wine Festival. We were somebody's sort of lackey there, just sort of helping out. I think actually for Grand Cochon, the big pig cook-off. And... sort of like you walk around town afterwards and you're hopping into bars and out and, you know, everybody there is a pro, you know, in the industry in some way. Or somebody who's just really enamored with chefs and food and wine. And I get into an argument with this guy, really smart seeming, but kind of like really humble dude about whether
or not...
It
wasn't an argument. It wasn't like...
A long conversation.
It was a conversation.
Yeah.
About whether or not Chicago really is a great food town.
Okay. Wow, this is definitely a food. This is like a food party. Like
yeah.
It's a bar full of, you know, it's like everybody's
finished. Is Chicago food town or not?
Yeah.
Exactly. I get out. We finish. We finally wrap up.
And I'm
up.
Like nudging.
I've had a lot to drink.
Right.
Yeah.
Sarah's like,
and I'm also like nudging him the whole time. Like,
she's like,
hey.
By the way, that was Paul Kahn.
Oh shit. Wow.
I'm like, that might not be such a good idea. Maybe back off a little bit on Chicago.
He was like, no, you got to go there and check it out again. Try some more restaurants. And I was like, I don't know, man. I'm going to head up to Minneapolis next. This seems cool.
Isaiah's like super into Minneapolis at that point. Was like,
I love it.
Minneapolis is where it's at. And the guy's like, Chicago's pretty good. I don't know. We're like, no.
Okay, now lie
Paul
to
Kahn,
us.
Well, Paul Kahn, that's for context, is a very well-known restaurant owner in Chicago. Blackbird.
Avec. Big Star Taco.
Yeah. Nico Asturia.
Violet Hour,
yeah.
He's been on Top Chef as a guest.
He's really...
I think between all the restaurants,
cool.
I mean, I think that's everybody amazing. that's like really good.
Yeah.
You know, like, has been a sous chef for him at one time.
He also
time,
looks like he could be an angry man, and you may have dodged.
That
could also be
I just hope I never see him again, because that's you know.
We did see him again. Or not.
Okay.
The last one is we were very, very proud to have been making at Woodbury Kitchen again our own phyllo dough. We're making baklava. We were stretching strudel dough for strudels for a long time. We thought it was the coolest thing. We thought we were really hot shit. And somebody came into town to do a episode of their show. What's the show called?
Yanni.
Dirty Kitchens or something. Kitchen Restaurant Disaster.
Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah, Gordon Ramsay.
Yes. That's who we're talking about, yes.
And we're right around the...
I'm familiar with my other Ramsay out there.
Oh, yeah.
Ramsay Bros.
It's your uncle?
Yeah.
He came
Uncle Gordon?
Yeah. I call him Gordy.
I like his pickles.
Yeah.
So he came in to eat at Woodbury because it was sort of like the first sort of restaurant of any character close to the neighborhood where he was filming his show. And we sort of knew inevitably he was going to have to come back and do an obligatory tour of the kitchen. So we're thinking to ourselves, like, well, you know what we'll do is we'll wait to make our phyllo dough.
Ah, nice.
Until he's coming back. And then we'll be like, really, really impressed Gordon Ramsay.
It's raw!
Well, exactly. And Jax.
So we wait and we wait and we wait. And he like just ends up sitting and eating for forever. And by the time he comes back and really is like doing the kitchen tour and glad handing everybody, it's well after midnight. And we're back there like idiots, like stretching pastry dough. Like obviously at this point, you know, we're doing it for the effect. And just so happens to be like possibly like the worst instance of us doing that ever. I mean, stuff looked terrible. Holes everywhere, stretching. It was just not.
You guys have been stretching this dough for a
while. Yeah, so it's the same piece of dough. He comes around the corner.
He comes around the corner, sees the phyllo dough, his face falls, and he's like, what the fuck is this? And he goes full on Hell's Kitchen mode, and he's like, this is the worst shit I've ever seen in my life. And we had to sort of bow our heads in shame.
All right, this is the most elaborate lies.
This is the greatest one.
Well, you know
all
what our favorite show is? Our favorite show actually is Would I Lie to You? Have you ever seen that?
I just saw that show for the first time. It's amazing.
Oh, we listen to it in the car all the time, so we're prepared.
It's Eddie, you gotta check it out.
Okay, fine.
It's a British, like, half an hour game show. It looks really, like, underproduced, but
it's
they're
quality.
Still doing it now.
Super quality.
And, it's just people, like, two teams going against each other basically doing this.
So you guys have made up three very elaborate stories. And Sarah, like, you played your part well. You backed him up at the right points in time and all those and all the lies. So, like, basically we have to choose one story.
Like a well-fermented vinegar, these stories have been.
Yeah. You
know. We've been working on them for a year. Hopefully someone
will
ask us to do this.
Eddie Kim, what you got? I'm either going to go with number one or number three. I think number one.
Christ, I was about to go for number two.
Oh, fuck.
Ooh.
Let's do number one.
What do we get?
Let's do one.
All right, Bill Cosby is a lie.
Bill Cosby is a truth.
Son of a bitch!
Guess again.
Oh, wow.
Does that work? No, I don't want to do the double shame.
I know this game. It's called Eating a Mile of Shit. All
right. Here's the thing. I don't know if we cheated, because the one that's a lie is a little bit true.
Okay.
All right. Gordon Ramsay did come to eat at Woodbury Kitchen.
Okay.
He did take forever to eat.
Okay.
He did come and tour the kitchen well after midnight. We did wait all night to make our phyllo dough. Okay. And it was awful.
But he was nice about it.
Ah, okay. All right.
True.
He was super nice. And actually, Gordon Ramsay was really, really nice.
I feel like he's a nice guy. I feel like he's
super soft spoken.
He has a thing that he does that is for like the camera.
Yeah.
But
okay. Yeah, Paul Kahn was super true.
That's amazing. That's
amazing.
I wanted to not believe that. Top five embarrassment moment in my life.
The whole time I was like, hey. You know who that is? He's like, I don't know, Paul.
Oh, God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well.
All right. Well, that is amazing. All these lies were amazing.
Maybe we should take a break. Yeah.
Yeah, let's take a break. I need to recover after that.
Yes. We will refill our glasses.
That was an emotional journey.
And we will jump straight into the acid vat.
Yeah.
All right.
Take a little acid trip.
Yeah. All right, that's Shift Drink. Stay tuned, and we'll be back in a second.
All right. Listeners, we are back. Alexia, who were those super dope beats by? That was really awesome.
They were super dope beats. That is Kido, K-I-E-D-O. The track is called Let's Go West, Baby. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kido. That was amazing.
Alexia, how are you liking the drink? I know we made you one. Are you done with yours?
It is really good. Oh, almost good. There. Very good.
Alexia, you should know there's Coca-Cola in there.
Stop. Just stop.
Last week, we unfortunately, I broke Alexia's Coca-Cola abstention of 8 years.
Ooh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mistakenly. We were drinking Fernet and Coke, and
that's what we do here.
Yeah.
Someone break your heart in Atlanta?
Yeah. All right. So we're joined by Sarah and Isaiah of Keep Well Vinegar and White Rose Miso.
And you also, what's your soap brand? You also make hand soap?
Yes, Accidental Quotidien.
Accidental Quotidien.
Yeah, that's a lesser known third project.
Yeah, that one's not really for the bait.
That's another account we have to follow on Instagram.
No, they don't.
Yeah, we're still working up.
That's our underground
soap content ideas. You know, like sort of.
Yeah, there's only so many pictures of liquid soap you can take. That's
can we talk real talk real quick?
Yeah.
Miso face rubs.
What?
Face masks.
What?
Oh.
Yeah, I just gave you your fourth Instagram handle.
Is this a cross?
Is that the name of the company?
No, that's not the name. Yeah. Name's pending.
Concept. Yeah, like a salt scrub. Concept.
Yeah, like a salt scrub with miso.
I like guys. It. I like it an awful lot.
Not a bad idea.
Okay.
Smells good.
Feels good.
Enzymes.
Tastes good.
Yeah, like all the things.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a lot of those face scrubs that you can eat too.
Yeah, I feel like miso's. I mean, again, you'd be working with because like you do like the sugar scrub with the miso. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about.
Could you sell it as like a salt scrub / seasoning?
Yeah.
Like you could like put it in the pan, like in the mug or in your mug.
I feel like there's like you do a jar and it's a face mask situation and it's
they just
probably
like, totally
just
ignore
miso.
You can always tell when Isaiah thinks he said something really funny. He like kind of waits. He's like, right?
In a mug.
In a mug and in your mug.
Yeah.
There you go. Done.
All right. Bringing it back.
All right. We got a little bit of help from a good friend of yours who wrote a book called Acid Trip. Harlan Turk, Michael Harlan Turkle, up in New York City. He wrote a book about vinegars, and you guys were featured in it. He actually said very much the same thing that you said earlier. You have changed how your relationship with sugar from pastry chefs as we're shoving donuts in our mouths right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we still can't resist eating people sugar, but
they brought us donuts.
Yes.
All future guests, listen up. This is what you do.
Yeah, this is a high bar. Very high bar.
Yeah, nothing like walking into the hotel where you're right across the street from like the most expertly baked, like beautiful locally sourced and bringing in some trash like Dunkin' Donuts so knockoffs.
Elvis donut.
Where they spell custard with a K.
Oh yeah. That's for cool effect.
How did this transition happen from pastry chef with pure sugar into transforming sugar into vinegar?
Well, you know, we started saying it, I think, kind of as a joke. You know, we felt there was one particular dessert that had kind of got a little bit of notoriety.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't really take it off the menu, and it was this huge, sort of almost vulgar sundae. Which not only had a ton of sugar, but actually sort of the defining feature of it was that it had this hard sugar shell on top that you had to crack through. Totally superfluous. I mean, just there, just, you know, for sort of touch effect. So,
yeah.
So we started saying as a joke that, like, this is our atonement for...
Yeah, you know. I mean, and it's kind of a joke, but also kind of not. That we started to realize, and at Woodbury, we started to realize that we really cared so much about local agriculture and what we were doing, and at the same time we were just using so much sugar.
Yeah.
And you know,
so the step one was that
there's an amount of responsibility that you feel.
Yeah, of course.
Not to get too like nerdy about it, but like
you're on the exact right.
I mean, you're feeding people a lot of sugar and fat, and that's delicious, but it ends up being where we were maybe, you know, in our more kind of philosophical moments, thinking that it's easy to make food taste good with a lot of sugar.
Sure.
It's really easy. It's hard for me to make something wrong out of chocolate and sugar and butter.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like that?
So you went from kids loving you everywhere to kids basically hating you.
Surprisingly, kids at the market still really like vinegar. The little ones really like vinegar still, which always weirds me out. But yeah, no. The adults, less so. We have a lot of adults that are like, no, I'm good. I'm vinegar. Thanks.
Yeah. just for our listeners, kind of, I mean, we're talking about that sugar conversion. What's vinegar 101?
Oh, so simplest, you start out with some type of liquid medium that has enough sugar to convert into alcohol, and then you convert that alcohol by exposing it to a lot of oxygen and giving it some type of bacteria leg up. We call it mother of vinegar, and it's actually some previous vinegar from a batch prior. And that converts the rest of the alcohol into vinegar.
Yeah, into essentially, acetic acid.
The bacteria eats alcohol and creates acetic acid as its byproduct, which is what vinegar is.
As long as you've got a minimum of 4% acetic acid, and you're sort of like within the regulatory guidelines, and you can put it on the supermarket shelf and say this is
shelf stable.
Yeah.
So it's shelf stable. Actually, that's a really interesting thing to say because we get that question a lot. You know, ours is live. We don't pasteurize it. So we do suggest that people refrigerate it because you'll get that funny little mother that grows, and that really freaks some people out. And, you know, rightly so.
The mother's totally cool.
Yeah, it is. It's a byproduct of the bacteria. It's kind of, it forms this biofilm that lets you know that it's doing the right thing. And actually, the mother is really one of my favorite things because it tells you about the health of the vinegar and what stage it is. So you learn how to recognize, you know, I could look at one from 100 yards away and say, it's almost done, or it's not done, or it just started, or it has too much of this, or too much of this. So,
see, I would look at that mother and say, like, that's a mother is far away.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't.
A mother just looking at it. If you subscribe to your Instagram, you touch it all the time.
Yeah. Oh, so we remove it every day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it actually can be. It's actually. If you leave it in there, so the vinegar, you. This is when I start to think that maybe if you want to like.
No, no. This is exactly the forum.
So, the vinegar is actually a sort of a living thing, so it needs to breathe. And so, if you leave that mother on top, it will effectually suffocate it in some ways, and that mother will sink occasionally, and that also can create a lot of issues. You kind of want to maintain a clarity in the vinegar. You want to make sure there's not a lot of other things floating around in the vinegar for other yeast to kind of latch onto and start to propagate. You end up trying to create a selective environment.
A sunk mother will actually start to decompose, and in so doing will sort of introduce competing biological processes that are sort of fighting with the acetic acid bacteria for oxygen, meaning that you're maybe producing off flavors and slowing down the progress and giving yourself a lot of chance for things to go old, musty, and just generally.
So the last stage of vinegar, really, and I try to think of it as the last stage, there's three stages, is that you put the vinegar away, and that is to take oxygen back away from it and bottle it up. Because if you
that stops the process.
Kind of. It slows it enough that you're not going to be creating those constant mothers. And once a vinegar is fully converted, you just don't want to leave it out anymore. It's going to start to, just like wine, evaporate and oxidize and get all sorts of weird.
And full conversion is measured in what? Is that acid levels?
Yes. Okay. We titrate it. So we know what the sugar that we start out with, and then the end titration should be around a complete, you know.
Awesome.
Yeah, it probably involves some tech that we don't really have to detect whether or not there's any actual alcohol left to be converted. So we have to sort of rely on math and then and time, repeated, stable, and consistent measurements.
It's really low tech. Like what we're doing is a really old kind of... You know, there's equipment that you can use and large manufacturers would use to kind of aerate it constantly and all sorts of things that you can do, but we do it mostly through time.
Awesome. But that's a little bit of the beauty. So how consistent are your batches? Each batch must be, if they are different, how different do they get?
I'd say it's pretty easy for us to make sure that there's like a really solid hunk of consistency.
Yeah, we start with, you know, we're coming from a pastry kitchen a little bit on the end of obsessive compulsive with recipes and amounts and measurements. So we try to be, but that's a really important thing actually is for us is consistency.
Sure.
One of the things that we wanted to make sure of before we started a business was that we could continue to produce the same product. And if you think about vinegar, each batch takes a year. So we're in our third year of being a business.
Well, at the end of the day, too, it's also, it's kind of a little bit out of your hands because, like, it's, I mean, just like wine, like, there's going to be different, I mean, different harvests, different, I mean, the...
Absolutely.
You're relying on the product itself.
And we do, of course, have a little bit of a laissez-faire attitude whenever we can afford to with regard to, like, what yeast... we're sort of letting in. If I get in awesome Concord grapes or, you know, Cabernet Franc or what have you, a lot of winemakers would have some sort of washing or or a cleaning step on the fruit and then reintroduce, you know, bread yeast or something specific.
Some kind of, some kind of yeast.
I'm really into letting it go.
Yeah.
A simple wash and we ferment everything on the skin and on the seeds.
Cool.
All, everything whole fruit for much longer than you would if it was wine, to give it a sort of a lot of fruitiness, maybe even a little more tannin.
Sure.
Like all that structure. Again, extracting all of the flavor, because after you make the wine, you of course also have it open to air for months and months and months.
Right.
So there's a lot of chance for flavor to be lost.
Does that, I mean, do those tannins like translate into vinegar?
Oh man, I wish that I'd brought you a bottle of the Aronia Berry.
Yeah.
Because that's another one, you know, like I was saying earlier, totally unpalatable on its own. But what they lend is nothing really but astringency, a little bit of tannic woodiness.
That's super cool.
And actually, I don't know, you know, what you get is like you get a vinegar that almost tastes as if you made it from one of those big classic like 1990s Napa Valley cabs that's just like all dry and super huge. And it's really nice, you know.
Yeah, that's our go-to for like a red wine vinegar.
Ah, awesome.
Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, it never comes within 100 miles of a grape.
Yeah, we don't make
Well, and they use that very often, that Tailed Goat, I feel like. That's their, like...
That's what
they really...
Yeah. That's kind of their...
I think if anybody's taking that to its fullest extent, certainly them.
We're really excited about what they're doing with it.
Yeah, because they don't really use, from what I know, red wine vinegar that often. I feel like they mostly use your Aronia Berry.
Yeah.
Are you guys ever like... Do you guys ever kind of like stop your process and be like, well, this is pretty good booze right now. Maybe we don't want this to go to vinegar.
You know, an interesting one actually is the black garlic. Remember when you were drinking that and it was like really just...
Let's talk about black garlic real quick.
Yeah.
Because you guys were making your own when you guys were over at Honeycomb.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I got introduced to you guys. And you guys make a black garlic vinegar.
Yeah.
So you're taking fermentation... And then you're taking fermentation off fermentation. It's very meta.
Very often. So, you know, like Sarah was just saying, you know, you get acetic acid is a conversion from alcohol, and alcohol is a conversion from sugar. Sometimes you got to do some work to get to the point of just having sugar in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, if we make a honey or a maple vinegar, you know, it's obviously, you know, really super easy for us.
Sure.
But you know, if you're going to start making something from barley, you've got all these complex chains of carbohydrates. Rice is a big one.
That's one I've been working on for a long time.
You do a lot of stuff with Carolina gold rice.
So I'm making sake with it, but it's
the sake is fantastic.
Oh my god,
the vinegar.
That's actually
is
something
very
we drink.
Temperamental.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, the vinegar is really temperamental is a good word, but we're getting there.
So all right, so. I want to come back to the Carolina Gold's vinegar.
Sorry to jump the gun there.
Black garlic.
So in the case of black garlic, one of the cool things when you make it that happens is that all of those carbohydrates in garlic become broken down into small sugars.
And what is the process for black garlic? I've read it's like 48 days of like low, slow.
All right, I'm going to tell you where I learned it and what I learned. And when it sort of first hit the scene, everybody thought it was like this ultra ancient...
Right.
Sort of Korean tradition, you know. Especially some of the first people who were selling it and capitalizing on the lack of knowledge about it,
right?
You know, really took pains to present it as this mysterious thing. I spent a few days at Bar Tartine in San Francisco, and I saw them tell this secret to like three other people who were staging there at the same time. They're like, put it in a rice cooker, plug the rice cooker in, but don't turn it on so it just stays warm.
Yeah.
Leave it there for check it after like 14 days. May take a little longer.
It's painfully simple.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's not really a fermentation. It's actually a really slow caramelization.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So someone I read a study and someone actually broke it down and realized there's not much fermentation.
Not really.
On.
Yeah. I don't know.
And it's really cool because when you do that, we've tried actually to make vinegar out of white regular garlic.
Sure.
It does not go well. It's
why is
terrible.
That?
It struggles to ferment because the sugar is just a little less digestible.
Right. Okay. So it's kind of, if you think of like a processed sugar versus like a fruit sugar.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It's more complex, so it just doesn't go that well. But garlic itself is sugar.
Yeah. For every 100 grams of garlic you've got 30 grams of carbs.
Right.
And you can break those all down.
Okay.
You know, just like a rice cooker from the Goodwill.
Yeah. And I mean, it ends up with enough sugar to make wine.
Yeah. Huh, that's so cool.
And anytime you can make wine.
Oh yeah. My goodness.
You can make vinegar.
I do have a good story of a very prominent restaurant in DC where I had to run to Whole Foods because they ran out of black garlic. And I bought the entire Whole Foods out of all their black garlic.
$18,000.
It was obscenely expensive.
Yeah, it was $18,000. Well, and
I was like, dude, just...
That's crazy.
Just like heat it up. A couple days in advance. Here
we go. That's amazing. All right. That's good to know. That's
it doesn't take that long. It takes maybe 20 days.
Yeah. I mean... Your rice cooker is going to have a slightly different temperature than ours. But to back to your original point about it not being necessarily fermentation, ours is well above 140 degrees, which means that there's not a lot that's living in there,
sure,
if anything, during the so there's no...
It's just a slow turn of slow conversion sugars.
Cool.
I had a quick question, actually. I worked in a Japanese restaurant, and one of the pickles that we used to make was nukazuke, which is highly dependent on the hand that literally touches the... It's like a type of root or Japanese radish. And I was wondering if you've noticed that literally your body flora and fauna has impacted your
vinegar. I was going to make up a lie about that when I was talking about the dirty, like... Have you ever seen there's a butter company in Sweden that... was doing butter for Noma, where they had like a male and a female butter based on who had their hands in it.
Interesting.
And there's a lot of that, like...
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Our hands are in everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But...
I'll tell you what. I don't know if this is really the answer to your question, but as the company's really sort of developed, you know, we found that my role is often to sort of take the first steps in figuring out a new process, and Sarah's is to refine it and really make it excellent. So I find that the less that I touch things, as we refine methods for every individual thing, the better it gets. So there might be something to
Sarah's
what you're
got
saying.
The better floor.
Yeah.
Sarah's swooning over here.
Maybe she's born with it.
Maybe it's microbiome.
Full disclosure. Don't scare everyone. There's always so much hocus pocus about fermentation.
It's holy right here.
I think I'm blushing.
Oh, go on.
Start cultivating more Sarah.
I feel like that kind of speaks to your label here. You have overlapping elements. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you wanted to get...
Let's get deep about it.
The colors in the label are samples of actual shots of our vinegar.
Yeah. Ah, cool.
Yeah. And the Kipo logo is actually the chemical symbol for acetic acid, too.
What?
Yes, yes, right here.
That's... Yeah.
It's a carbon chain.
Yeah,
double.
Yeah.
Oh, you.
Nicely
I see
done.
You. I see you.
Molecular biology major.
Oh,
so.
Really?
We should talk after the show.
Oh,
too.
No. I don't want orgo PTSD.
No, just because people will ask me, like, as soon as they learn that, they'll ask me follow-up questions about it, and that's like my depth of knowledge is like fully reached at that point.
I got a D in orgo and like passed the lab with flying colors, because anytime it's like a lab, I'm like...
Me too, actually. But, like, I did horribly in orgo.
The class is gibberish, but the lab, I was like, all right, okay.
You guys both must have really good microflora.
Yeah, I was going to say, Eddie's flora must be on point.
Is it?
I can tell.
Yeah, you got a glow. You got a glow, too.
It's Asian. The Koreans make great pickles. I get it from my mother.
So you guys have two brands right now.
Yes.
Why the differentiation?
That was me. It was, you know, we were really thinking along down the line, thinking that people would be really confused as to why is there a vinegar company making miso.
Sure.
So that was just if ever we ended up on a shelf somewhere. Just trying to make it easier for people. It was pretty.
At the end of the day, you kind of have this like little inside joke. You're like, it's all me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
extremely arbitrary.
We think a lot about how to make things less confusing, because the basic premise of our company is confusing.
Yeah. I mean, people ask us all the time, like, what keep well means and what white rose miso is. And it's really arbitrary. Like, we really wanted it to be a simple name that did not confuse people at all. And it sometimes works. Yeah. You know, people really read a lot into your company name. And,
very much so.
Ours, you know, Keep Well had a little bit to do with vinegar actually being a preservative. You know, you could go there.
Vinegar itself keeps well. If you use it to pickle something, it keeps other things well.
Well, also, I mean, you know, I mean, and this is to your other brand, but miso never really goes bad. Miso's a ever living, breathing.
Matthew and I both have tubs of your miso.
Yeah, we just
sitting in the back of our fridge. For
really?
Years.
I still have Benedict miso.
Wow.
It's like,
and every now and then I'll just like put my finger in. It's like, wow.
Is it good?
So good.
Yeah, I mean that's hopefully what the vinegar is like too. We just want it in it, and it should. If we could wait another 5 years before we sell anything, I would do it in a heartbeat.
It's super umptious.
The vinegar gets so much better too.
The the people behind Hex Ferments brought us back.
Ah, yeah.
Another like super important early supporter of all of our efforts. Brought us back some 10-year-old miso from Japan after a trip they took there, and we've eaten some of it, but now I think it's like 13-year-old miso.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really amazing. It's like balsamic miso.
Yeah.
And it's just
super amazing.
I'm looking forward to when we get gochujang going in like a more like producible way so that we can hold on to some of it, because we never get to hold on to enough.
For more than
you just said the magic word for me.
Yeah.
Eddie's been waiting for this word all night.
You want to talk about it?
Well, I mean, I wrote it down.
Let's do
it. I have it in our show notes with big exclamation points.
It's my favorite thing.
let's talk about what is gochujang in your words.
Gochujang is a soybean paste, a chili soybean paste, and so the Korean soybean paste are, in my opinion, only maybe. Really interesting, maybe more interesting than some of the miso, Japanese style miso, because they're wilder. It's kind of like sourdough bread versus white bread, in my opinion.
Sure,
that's interesting.
And so the way that we make it is we make a soybean and rice.
Carolina gold rice?
Yeah. We cook and grind them together, and then we let them kind of sit out.
They pick up a lot of the aspergillus oryzae on their own, and you can see the mold start to grow.
And
you sort of, through experience and sort of reading wherever literature you actually can find about
research.
It, you know, you sort of carefully modulate sort of how moist they're getting, how quickly they're drying out to grow the mold correctly. And
That's called meju, and so you have a meju block, and then we take that and brine it for another period of time. So this is a really long process, and then we take that out of brine, press it. You end up with like a soy sauce variation, and then we take that paste, which is its own thing, tenjang, and add malted barley and
whatever your spicy is on it,
right? Your pepper, and then we ferment that for longer, and
you guys are way more Korean than I am right now.
You know, I actually have adopted brothers and sisters that are Korean, and I grew up going to Korean culture camp. That was like my summer camp. Super nerdy, like the only white girl there, obviously, and so Korean food has always been my
jam.
Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome.
But I like gochujang because it's a little bit sweeter and coming from like the rice and the malted barley.
How long are we talking on that process?
Well, hold on. That's where your magical flora came from, because you were around Koreans a lot.
Yeah. There you go. Done.
We just tracked it down. Okay.
It all makes sense to Eddie Kim.
In my twist in mind, it makes sense.
The gochujang goes for about a year. 9 months to a year.
I mean, by the time you're dropping the malted barley and the gochugaru in it, you're at 6 months minimum.
Yeah.
And then we've noticed some variation in how long it takes to get to, like, it's sort of tight at that point, and
whatever.
The enzymes continue to break things down, it sort of loosens and sweetens. So to get to an acceptable point where we think that where it's a finished product, or maybe not a finished product, but something that's ready to eat, can be 9 to 14, 15 months.
I mean, we would love to have it be longer than that all the time.
Sure. Well, and I imagine with all your products, I mean, you guys are essentially like kind of mold wranglers and like guys are dealing with
we have billions of prep cooks.
Yeah, it's like creating selective environments. Like we try to make a nice home for them.
Are you guys tasting all the time, all the way throughout the process?
Oh, absolutely! I'm making this super experimental,
Laotian
sort of like hard fried and then cooked soybean paste with a lot of peppers in it.
Cool.
And it's spicy as hell.
Yeah.
And I've just also tasted really it like mild. As many times yeah. as I think.
That's the Trois Nouveaux paste.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Exactly.
Oh, look at you.
That's another fun one where there's like you get a sort of a sprinkling of information about how it's made or what it tastes like here and there. Shout out to Tip Cow and Bobby and Chef Sang.
They give you help on this.
Oh, yeah. Tons of help.
Yeah.
And as well as like technical help, but also encouragement.
Right on.
Yeah.
And we also think that, you know, we got to sell it to somebody once we make it. So holler.
Hopefully we do it right.
Know your audience, right?
Well, it can be like really challenging too when you start on doing these fermentation projects and they take a year. So sure. You're just like,
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're doing the bay sauce and the Worcestershire and like, we know that they'll turn out right, but you have kind of one chance to do it, and
it's
difficult to correct during that process because you don't know how long to be patient for to see if a flavor works out or does it change. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and so it's sometimes really hard to be patient and say, "Boy, let's just sit on it and see what happens." And because sometimes we've done it, and those are the things that are really great.
I sometimes wonder if part of our motivation is the fact that now, with you know, forums and everybody's publishing books, and you know, there's, I don't know how public this is, but there's a guy who like uploaded the 27 gigabyte library of all of like the fermentation industrial textbooks and stuff.
I feel like we're in different Reddit.
This is where it might get too.
I don't know if I saw that one.
There's just like, I mean, there's an amount of knowledge about how to, I don't know, like temper chocolate or make a certain kind of candy or make neutral caramel or spherify things. I mean, you can find that stuff now.
Yeah.
But like the stuff that takes years to do is maybe like the last, you know, where the last true secrets reside. Well, you know, to this day, like, what's in Worcestershire sauce?
Well, here really is. I took a seminar with Jim Meehan, a great bartender, a couple days ago, and he said, like, he just released a book, and he said, whatever, all my secrets are in this book, but you're not going to be a good bartender until you actually bartend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with being a chef or making products. So
or making, whatever. Making bread, right? Like, you can read the recipe out how to make a good loaf, like, it's until you, like, start understanding the dough.
Yeah, that's actually a really good example.
Yeah. You got to work with it.
Yeah, I mean, because anything that we're making is a ratio. We use a certain amount of salt. We use a certain amount of sugar. And then we let it sit. And then you have to take care of it.
And then you touch it a lot.
A lot of
it's really, inoculated. It's so tempting.
Are you ever like, bad mommy?
I'll never forget the first time, like when we were first getting into fermentation a lot. I mean, we're still at Woodbury and we're like, you know, making our first miso or our first, you know, kimchi. Somehow I carved out a few days to go spend time at a place called Culture Pickle in Berkeley, where they've been making for, I guess, more than 20 years now, probably, you know, amazing pickles of every stripe.
Because that was like 7 years ago.
Yeah, and that was probably like 20 years then. And they're sort of like everybody's got a story about like, oh, I stashed with them, and that's how I figured out how to, you know, start my own company. And I spent, I don't know, 2 or 3 days there just scrubbing cucumbers, you know, some real Danielson shit. And without, like, extracting any concrete information from that at all, not one recipe, not one ratio, not one technique. And eventually, I remember I was sort of sitting opposite from one of their main guys. We're just packing tubs of sauerkraut, doing another menial task. And I was like, look, there's 5 things that you have to do every time you do like a salt-based lacto-fermentation. Like 5 things you have to remember. What are they? He's like packing. He's like, looks at me. He's like, respect. Purity.
Oh,
and I don't remember 3 through 5, but they sucked as soon as the first two. But the lesson was real and it was good. You know what I mean? The lesson was incredible. It was like, you'll figure out, you know, 2 to 3% or 5%, you know, 5.5% salt brine or whatever. You know, a lot of that stuff is out there now.
But it also, it starts with just kind of practicing and respecting your product. And
yeah. And don't think that just because you came out here and scrubbed cucumbers for 12 hours that it means we owe you anything.
Well, let's start wrapping things up here. We have a nice little series called Rapid Fire.
Time for the payback. Oh, I'm not ready for that.
Rapid fire. It's not that rapid. It usually actually goes off the rails.
Let's go.
Oh, good, because we're really good at that.
We should rename it medium fire.
Yeah. Lukewarm. Should we just start?
Yeah.
Okay. If not a vinaigrette, then would you choose ranch or blue cheese dressing?
Whoa. Ranch with yogurt instead of mayo.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice.
Sour.
What's your go-to McDonald's order?
We're vegetarians now. So
are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
that. I know.
That.
I know. It's true.
I feel like I should have seen that one coming. But.
It was inevitable.
Hash browns?
Well, it was really funny because I was just saying as we were driving here this morning, it was like 10:30. All of a sudden, McChicken just like popped in my head.
You guys remember when double cheeseburgers were $1 on the dollar menu?
Yeah.
So it was McChicken.
$4 could get you two McChickens and two double cheeseburgers.
Yeah, we were
if you were in college, like you just ate for 2 days off $4.
All right, I'm gonna get a redo then. Because you guys are vegetarians now. What's the weirdest experiment you've done with your fermentation? What's like good or bad?
Well, we've done some really weird ones. I'll say one that turned out to be, like, abhorrently bad. Watermelon vinegar.
Someone just
it can be good.
Yeah.
Someone just, but this was a while ago, and I tried to make, you know, it occurs to you, like, watermelon's so sweet, obvious, right?
Yeah.
It's really, really bad vinegar. Very, very bad.
Little known secret, almost everything that's considered a fruit is at a pH of 4.6 or below. Mm-hmm. Curiously, almost everything that is considered a vegetable is above that line. It's kind of a funny little natural breaking point.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Watermelon, on the other hand, are, if I remember right, they're about 5.5.
Yeah.
So the funny thing that happens is that you have this longer period of time before the point at which you acidify enough to keep funny flavor-producing biological processes.
So you would have to add an acid, which I did not know do. To get it to drop quickly enough, so you end up with all this weird, weird, terrible things that happen, and from something just sitting there not being acidified.
Because pickled watermelon rinds are pretty amazing,
right? As they are. Exactly. Yeah, and I mean, and it was just so silly because watermelon, there's so many of them. They're not expensive. They're
right.
a fruit that farmers often have too many of. Melons, generally, you know how like you've got a million melons. What are we gonna do with them?
Yeah.
Easy to juice. Should have gone.
But vinegar failure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's painful.
Well, conclusion, fuck watermelons.
Yeah.
I think I've seen a video of that.
Okay.
that's another Reddit forum.
Is today your day off? Yes? Would you consider today to be day off?
They drove down all the way from Pennsylvania to get
down. We are drinking.
I mean, we did some foraging. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, we did some foraging.
Well, what would you do on your day off?
Oh.
Other than drink.
What's your perfect Pennsylvania date night? You guys live up in Pennsylvania now. You're on a farm.
Well, we just got a house, so we really like tooling around the house.
Yeah.
That's actually, I would say, what we enjoy most on days off.
Yeah.
Well, I do. Just like working on the house.
I'm in the same boat right now. We just got a house.
Yeah.
Nice. Here in the city.
Yeah. It's like every day I was like, should we go on a road trip? Like,
Yeah. It's really, I've never had that before. It's nice to be like, to have a space that you're like.
Nest. Yeah. I keep knocking out walls. I haven't, I haven't rebuilt any of them yet.
No.
But I'm like, this wall is not good enough.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not right the way
he's
it is.
He's got all sorts of posts in the basement that he's like, cranking up.
You got like the cage, like, knock here, knock here. Okay, this wall's good to go.
I tell you what. Kool-Aid man of this house.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What was your guys' go to teenage drink?
Oh.
I'm not expecting you guys to answer the same one. Boons for you?
Boons.
I mean, I was started how did cram drinking all, circa now that
you guys
1995.
Are in this, you guys are basically in this process. How do they cram all that melon and strawberry into one wine beverage?
Oh, well, you should, McCormick's.
You know who you should have actually some week on is our buddy who is like a flavor genius on the McCormick Spice Company.
This guy is like...
This guy will tell you
It's everything. Information you never knew you didn't know.
All right, we'll talk after this.
This guy, I may be violating some kind of NDA here, but he spent something like 2 to 3 years working on the substitute ingredient for MSG in McDonald's ranch dressing.
Yep.
How would you ever substitute MSG? It's the best thing in the world.
That part I definitely can't basic as talk it is. About you. But
it's controversial though. So.
It's controversial.
And he's like, we had to just make it taste exactly the same as it was before. There's just this public perception of MSG, and we had to take it off the ingredients.
Oh. Yeah, what was yours though? Come on, does this go back and forth?
Mine was Captain Morgan's.
Our high school drink.
Yeah.
SoCo and mine.
Shit! I used snake bites. That's what we call them. But I think that snake bites are something else. But someone told me snake bites is
lemonade and cider and something else.
All right, we're getting a little long on time here, so we could talk with you guys forever. But let's do a little Mary Fuck Kill.
Mary Fuck Kill. Yeah.
Fuck Mary Kill.
We always say that wrong, and then like the thing always corrects us.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Okay, so you guys live in Pennsylvania now.
We're in Amish country.
Oh,
God. And you guys were pastry chefs.
Yeah, so Pennsylvania Amish dessert edition.
Fuck,
Mary, Kill.
Did some research trying to find out the top three. So the shoe fly pie.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
That's obvious, yeah.
The whoopie pie.
Yeah.
Nice.
Or the fruit hand fry pie.
Oh, kill that one.
Okay.
Whoa.
Kill.
For sure.
Marry that one.
No, I hate.
You might live a little longer if you marry that one.
Mary would be the shoe fly.
I know you would.
Yeah.
You're going to make whoopie with whoopie pie.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's a little trite, but yeah.
Yeah, fuck whoopie.
Yeah. Yeah, we would marry the shoe fly.
Shoe fly. That's a molasses.
Next time I see you, we're bringing you some of Sarah's shoe fly pie.
I mean, you guys, listeners and future guests, they brought us donuts, vinegars.
Yeah.
The vinegaroni.
The world famous black walnut based sauce.
Yeah. Well, we're not in a kitchen anymore, so I've taken on, like, that would probably be another thing I do on the day off is that I continue to bake for no one.
Yeah. No, but it's fun, right?
Like, I still really love baking. Up until a few months ago, I was still working in a kitchen and doing like some lamination.
You were laminating croissants and
uptown and at Little Red Fox for a while.
Hell yeah,
they're great.
Hell yeah.
So I still miss it.
Well, thank you, friends, for joining us and coming down here.
Oh my God. Our pleasure. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's so fun.
We should do a part two sometime.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we didn't talk about the soap, so clearly there's a whole podcast.
Yeah. Also, listeners, you can revisit this week's episodes or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever you grab your podcasts, like Spotify. What up? And find us on all the social medias as @ShiftDrinkDC. Don't forget to review us on iTunes or give us a 1-star on Yelp, like TJ's mom. TJ, you know who you are.
Yeah. Tell your mom to give us a better review. A special thank you to Jeffrey Lamoureux for our intro music and DJ RecTech for our fantastic sound effects. And...
Do it. Say it.
I'm doing it. I'm doing this. This is written by Matthew, but I'm going to do it. And next week, Bill Murray joins us in the studio to discuss his upcoming frozen treat collaboration with McDonald's.
What?
The McMurray. Coming in two flavors, stripes and meatballs.
All right, that's all we got. All right, we'll see you next week.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.